This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
This Hero Quest time again, and I've got Kurgan here, a veteran Hero Quest player. He and I talked about a year or so ago, so I'll put a link in the show notes for the previous episode. You can go back and listen to the previous one and then listen to this one as well. So thanks, Kurgan, for coming back. I really appreciate it, and hopefully you can have some fun talking about the Hero Quest reboot, or I guess what's the proper verbiage for this, Kurgan?
Thanks for having me, Lee. Good to be here. Yeah, it's I call it the remake.
Remake.
2021 remake. Oh, whatever.
But, yeah, I don't know if there is an official. I don't know what Hero Quest fans have called it. I think reboot, remake, kind of interchange.
Whatever you want to do. Yeah. For me, I call this the remake, and I call classic.
There we go.
Original Hero Quest.
I think that's what they're calling.
Even though that encompasses lots of different versions.
It does.
But we'll get into that.
Yeah, definitely. So, what I wanted to talk about is, I guess we talked, like I said, last year about this before it came out, before the remake came out, and you had some opinions on it of then. I want to hear kind of, okay, now it's been a year, it's been out, you've had a chance to unbox it and play it and mess around with it and get some feedback from other people. What do you think is different now versus what your opinion of it was a year or so ago before it came out?
Oh, yeah. It's hard to believe it's been a year. It's crazy.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Flies.
It does.
Even though some of us have just been kind of like, you know, living in our basements, and it's like, here's where you put in the joke. It's like, wait, how is that different? Like,
yeah. That's always, yeah. There you go. Like, kids, we died to stay in our basement for weeks on end. Now we can't wait to get out, I guess.
I would say when the whole thing started, I had a lot of mixed emotions, a lot of mixed feelings about the whole thing, because it was very unclear to me what Hasbro was really doing with this. And there was a lot of sort of negative speculation. And I listened to a lot of it myself, because I thought, for all I know, this is just going to be some quick cash grab. This is going to be a mobile game, or this is going to be something that only, like, you know, 1,000 people are going to get through the website, and then it's going to go on eBay, and that's it. And
yeah,
Hero Quest isn't really back. It's just a big hype thing, and we're all going to get reeled in. So I was kind of steeling myself for something like that to happen. But my overall reaction now, and, you know, after you hear this, you can just end the podcast. Just kidding. No, yeah.
We're done.
Is that, no, it ended up being just fine.
Yep.
And most of the problems that we're seeing right now with, like, supply chain stuff and, like, pre-orders and, you know, stuff being out of stock and all that sort of thing seems to be not really the fault of Hasbro. I mean, maybe they should have planned better, but everybody that wanted to get the game got it. And then everybody that didn't hear about the pledge drive, which was probably most fans, they're just like, oh, wait, there was a pledge.
Yeah.
I never heard about that.
Yeah.
They're going to get it in retail.
Yes.
Which is what I wanted from the beginning, which was, okay, you can just walk into a store or call up the store, order your game, and get it. And that'll be happening in like 2 months. So in 2 months, pretty much everybody is going to get the game. Now, there's a few countries
I can get it on Amazon right now, or you could.
Yeah. 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 You have to keep checking. So it's a little bit of a rocky start, but it looks like what always should have been is happening, and so I'm happy about that. And a lot of my, I guess, trepidation about what's going to be in the Quest books, and, you know, are they going to make changes, all that kind of uncertainty, because they're very tight-lipped about it.
Yeah, they were
the whole time, and it didn't really make a whole lot of sense, because for some stuff, like with the new heroes, they were very much like, okay, we want you to play test this and give us feedback, and then we're like asking all these questions, and then they're just like nothing, you know,
total silence.
It's like, okay, what's the point of that? And so there was a lot of, well, you know, this, maybe they don't know what they're doing. This is going to be a big flop.
I think that's where you got a lot of veteran fans were skeptical. It's like, you guys are really tight-lipped. And being tight-lipped, I think, from Hasbro fed that fear, I guess, from veteran fans, do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I spent a lot of time on Ye Olde, and you know, it's funny because when I was listening to your original podcast, like the very first episode where you talked about Dwayne Agin and all that, I realized that it was Agin's Inn back in the day when I first visited. I didn't realize that the site had changed to Ye Olde Inn. Yeah. But it's cool how that whole community came back in a big way.
After they did. Some of those diehards have been around since the late 90s. Because I think I found Dwayne Agin's Inn in 98 or 99. I can't remember. It was real, real
way
early.
Before. Yeah, it was way before. Because I had pretty much forgotten all about HeroQuest. And I was just doing video games and school and, you know, my friends doing whatever. And just totally forgot about it. But yeah, it that community, I jumped in. And at first, I didn't want to share my creations. I was just reading other people's posts for a long time. So lurked for a long time. And then finally, just started doing stuff. And I was just amazed how quickly you could kind of get into a conversation. Kind of like when you meet an old friend that you haven't talked to in like 10 years. And it's just like, no time went by. So all these people are talking about, and it wasn't like, oh, well, why do you think you can be a part of our community? It was just like, nah, you played HeroQuest. It's all good. And so I enjoyed listening to other people's opinions and hearing, you know, a lot of the same stuff that I was concerned about, which was, okay, as we all know, every franchise has fanboys, right? And when I think of a fanboy, I think of somebody who is either their opinion is the only opinion that's allowed. Meaning like, oh, I hate Batman because he, you know, wears black now and he's terrible. Yeah. It's like, okay, there's that type of fanboy. And the other type of fanboy is like, oh, no matter what it is, they just love it. So it's like, okay, Batman's green now. Oh, that's the best. Green is the best color. Oh, no, just kidding. He's blue. Oh, well, blue is the best color. Like, you know, and if you don't like that, you're not a real fan. So I was like, okay, I'm going to tune those people out and I don't want to be that guy. But most of the people were very open and honest and they would say, okay, this is why I like HeroQuest. This is, you know, what I changed about it because people have been doing homebrew like all this time.
Oh, yeah.
And we realized, okay, the new game is going to be, it's going to be a package. And for a lot of people, this is going to be the first time they've ever seen HeroQuest. So we want it to be as good as it possibly can be. But then the question is, okay, what things are they going to retain from the old game and what things are they going to change or add? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us were concerned, well, what's going to happen? So now that we know, we know that, and if it's okay to get into it now.
Yeah, let's go ahead. Go ahead and dive in.
Okay, so very little has changed. And that's really what I wanted all along. And I think that's what a lot of fans wanted all along, which is that they weren't going to completely revise the lore and the story. They weren't going to completely change the gameplay into something else. A lot of people were worried because, okay, Hasbro owns Dungeons and Dragons, and Dungeons and Dragons is a big hype machine. And they're like, okay, they're going to change HeroQuest to be like Dungeons and Dragons instead.
Yeah.
But I thought, how could that be? Because they're still selling Dungeons and Dragons, and they have like the beginner, you know, my first quest type of thing in stores. And so HeroQuest is, it's not going to compete with itself, so it's going to be its own thing.
Yeah.
And so that was a relief. Not that I have anything against that other game, it's just that it's a different game.
It is. Yeah. Different audience.
So if McDonald's buys out Burger King, it's like, okay, we're still going to have the Whopper and the Big Mac, you know, it's just its own thing.
Yep. Good point. Good analogy.
Yeah. And the whole loss of Games Workshop in there, it was very interesting because I just watched a video and I'm forgetting the guy's name already. He doesn't even do much gaming stuff. He mostly does stuff with like spirituality. I wish I could remember the guy's name. It was on YouTube, but he did a HeroQuest video and it was so interesting because here was a guy from the UK, I believe, and he grew up with a heavily Games Workshop, you know, Citadel, Warhammer influenced European version of HeroQuest. And he was like, I'm glad it's gone. I was like, what?
Oh,
I would have thought, you know, that nostalgia would have been so strong. But he was talking about how, and I've seen this from other people talking about how, you know, Games Workshop is all about selling miniatures, of course, with Warhammer and Warhammer 40K, Age of Sigmar, all that stuff. And of course, that's their whole business model. But it's a totally different type of like ethos and community and product than HeroQuest. HeroQuest is you buy the box and you're done.
Yeah.
Really. The rest you just make up on your own. Yeah, there's expansions and things, but it's mostly just a spark to do your own creative stuff. Whereas Warhammer is more about collecting and painting. Yes. and collecting more and painting more
painting
and revising.
More, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, it's endless. And it's, as a hobby, it's like, it's very expensive.
It
you know,
is.
Maybe not as expensive as the old wargaming, you know, guys where they had to, you know, build all the terrain and everything and,
yeah,
you know, paint all your lead soldiers. But it just, that was very inaccessible for a lot of people. And so having HeroQuest as its self-contained thing was the main appeal. And it feels like this version has retained that. And so we just said, it's like, well, I'm glad Games Workshop is out of it because they've become so greedy and just annoying that I don't mind. And actually, a lot of the things people commented on, they said, well, who can copyright Chaos? You know, nobody can copyright Chaos.
Yeah, I know.
Chaos Warriors is like, oh, those that combination of words. But I don't know. I sort of, in my mind, I thought maybe they just did it out of respect, saying, okay, we know HeroQuest was a collaborative effort originally. Milton Bradley got together with Games Workshop, Stephen Baker, and all that. And they, you know, is this perfect storm of a product.
Yeah.
But now that Games Workshop is not there, okay, fine. We're going to just call them Dread Warriors now. Everybody knows what we're talking about.
I'm sure there was a meeting with lawyers about that. I bet you.
They said, we've changed it just enough.
Yeah.
Because in my head, I'm thinking, if they really wanted to take him to court over it, I mean, couldn't they? Because it's so, but the fact that they just kind of just put a little dot of paint on it and said, okay, it's different now.
Yeah.
That allows all the veteran players to go, yeah, we get it. You know, it's the same game. It's the same game.
It is.
And then brand new people just have no idea. So they're not affected.
That's
by
a good
it.
Point.
But you get to have all the same stuff. Yeah.
Speaking of brand new people, have you got some opinions back from brand new HeroQuest players? Have you heard either in person or online what their opinions are of, they don't know anything about Chaos Warriors and Femurs and all that stuff. What have you heard?
Yeah, it's funny because I was just looking at Reddit right before I got on here with you, and I was reading some stuff from people. And on Ye Olde Inn, we get new people, but it's a trickle compared to like Facebook and Twitter and all these other places, which I try not to spend a lot of time there because it's just endless. It just sucks up all your time. I prefer to talk to people that kind of know the stuff. Most of the people that I'm hearing from, it seems to be they have some memory of HeroQuest from back in the day. So they're not completely new.
Okay.
But they're playing it with their kids. And their kids are just like, oh, it's fun. You know, it's got stuff to do. And, you know, they're just kind of experiencing it. And so it's cool to see that. But then you also get people that say, well, you know, I pledged because my friends all told me that HeroQuest was great. So I thought I'd get into it. Or I saw the, you know, Bardic broadcasts and it was funny. So I want to be part of a meme for $150. I mean, I guess it's a lot to pay for a meme, but
it is,
you know, they got in and they are coming up with the same types of stuff that a lot of us have discussed already a million times. Like, well, I don't like the fact that I have to keep rolling to move. So, you know, what do I do? Or do you have to walk up to the treasure chest to search it? I mean, I don't understand. Or they say, well, what if you run out of treasure cards? Do you have to shuffle every time or just at the beginning of the quest? And so it's like they see the vagueness in the rules and they're asking for advice of us, of veteran fans. Like, what are the homebrew rules that make the game better or worse?
Yeah.
In your opinion. And then they start to see the variety of solutions we've all come up with, where some people want to make the game more complex, some people want to make it simpler, some people want to just strictly, you know, follow it by the book, you know, as much as possible. So I find that fun that they're going through that same process that we all went through, whether it was in the early 90s or for me like in 2002 or whatever.
I agree with you on the dads or moms introducing it to the kids, so the kids are getting the same type of air quotes here magic of being 10 and you know, playing with the furniture, playing with the characters, and just having the same fun that that we all did when we were 8, 9, 10, 11 years old or whatever it was that when we first picked it up. So, well, what about the veteran fans? I mean, we already kind of touched on some of that. What are the veteran fans saying, you think, for the most part on the re-release or the remake?
I can't speak for everyone, of course, but
for
me and for a lot of people I've seen, I think the biggest, I guess, negative was just the way it was marketed. It seems like there just wasn't much time for people to get involved, and a lot more people would have gotten involved if they'd heard about it. And so now it feels just kind of like they dangled this, you know, treasure chest in front of us and went, ha, psych, you know, okay, well, you can have a smaller treasure chest later, you know, just wait a little. And so they're kind of like, I think most of the questions were regarding the new material. Okay. So it's like, okay, we've seen the game system. It's pretty much the same. They've changed, you know, Black Fire Pass to Dark Fire Pass and, you know, Chaos to Dread. Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Sure.
Whatever. Okay. There's the elf is female now. Well, okay. I guess you can get a male elf if you get it through Hasbro Pulse, and that's not a big deal. So I was looking at the new quest books, and
yep.
Do you have it too?
Yeah.
Do you have
the game? I got the mythic. So yeah, I've got them all.
Okay. Yep. So Prophecy of Tel'or.
Okay.
My mini review is this is an excellent, excellent quest pack. I don't know how you feel about it, but just the fact that it was Stephen Baker, okay, a lot of people yep. were like, ooh, celebrity worship, you know, hero, you know, he's come back. And I thought, well, how do we know he's got the skill anymore? I mean, for all we know, he just, you know, he needed a paycheck and he just showed up. But I really feel, even with before playing it, just reading through it, that he just poured, you know, his heart out into it. And I don't know if he did it all by himself or if he had help, but I wouldn't sure. be surprised if he did it himself. And it just, there's so much story in there. You can tell he really felt for everybody that didn't like playing as the wizard, because he did as much as he could to make the wizard, like, give him stuff to do and
yes.
give him options. And it's like, oh, it's a really cool story. Yeah. And so Prophecy of Tel'or, I thought, gee, that was worth it. That was definitely worth mm-hmm. pledging as opposed to waiting.
Yeah.
And then all the people that didn't get it are like, oh man, can you like slip me a copy of that, you know, under the door, maybe
scan that so and send it to me.
Yes. Send it to me. And then you get the Spirit Queen's Torment. I think this one was controversial for a lot of people because I didn't know this guy, Teos Abadia, if I'm saying his name correctly.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about him either.
never heard of him. It's like, yep. okay, new guy, whatever. But there were people, I guess, from the D&D community who were like, oh, I don't like this guy. I don't like the way he does stuff.
Oh, okay.
And so they were afraid, oh, he's going to screw up HeroQuest. You know, and I thought, well, maybe, but
yeah.
at the same time, I'm sure these guys have like guidelines and like, you know, focus groups or whatever. Somebody is going to kind of edit their work. So
oh, yeah.
no one person is going to be able to derail the whole project. I mean, even Stephen Baker himself back in the day, he wanted to do certain things with HeroQuest that Milton Bradley didn't let him
yeah.
do.
Yep.
And maybe it was for the better. It's kind of like George Lucas, you know, firing his editor. It's like, yes. well, no, maybe keep that guy around, you know, or his wife in that case, George Lucas's case. It's like the finished product ends up being okay. Because sometimes, you know, artists don't know when to quit. It's like,
yes, many authors that write books say that the best books they write is when they go back and take stuff out.
You're yeah. forced to work within limitations.
Yes.
Rather than just. You can do anything and it just never gets done.
Yep.
So yeah, people were kind of like bad mouthing this guy. And I was like, I don't know what to think. I mean, cause I wasn't part of that community, but yeah, looking at the Spirit Queen's Torment, which was the quest book he did, I guess the big thing was, okay, orcs are good guys now. Yep. That was the thing. And yep. people were like, come on, they're the orcs are just, you know, these guys that you kill and, you know, shove them out of the way because they're, you know, they're monsters, whatever.
Exactly.
Why would they be good at it? But I thought back to when I was a kid, and when I was a kid, I loved monsters. I loved to draw monsters. A lot of little boys, you know, love to draw monsters. And
sure.
There'd be like good guy monsters. So there'd be yeah. monsters who would be the heroes and they'd fight the other monsters. And I guess, you know, it's like King Kong and Godzilla slugging it out.
Whatever. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go.
So I guess as a kid, if I had been presented with that, well, there's a couple of orcs that are on your side, like I wouldn't have looked askance. Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's necessarily betraying anything. I mean, the sure. lore was very vague as far as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it, lurking in the background was the Warhammer fantasy world, but most yes. of us didn't know about that stuff.
No.
And that's changed over time. I guess you had a time when you had orcs that were just, they had families like everybody else. And then there mm-hmm. was another part where they were actually like fungus spores that would just like could grow, you know. So I guess, oh, you're just killing a pile of mushrooms, so it's a big deal.
Grill them up, put them in our pizza.
Yeah, sure, why not? But I mean, but if you look back in HeroQuest, I mean, you had Grack and Ulog. I mean,
yes,
you know, he comes back to avenge his father's death, so you know, they had families.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
well, yeah, but
you can do it.
And Warcraft did this, and again, Warcraft is its own universe. HeroQuest is its own universe.
Yep.
Lord of the Rings, Tolkien. I mean, they're all different interpretations of these fantasy tropes, so they don't have to be the same.
Sure.
So the idea that there might be some orcs somewhere who are not completely evil is not totally bad.
Yeah.
But we were all wondering, how is it going to handle it? how is he going to tell this story in a way that, you know, isn't really goofy and forced and silly. And reading through it, I thought, it's not that bad. I mean, a lot of people were very negative about the bard hero.
Yeah, yeah.
The orc bard.
Some bard because, shade. Hashtag bard shade.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we joked about how we should have, like, when we're doing the unboxing, of course, we were probably like the 50th people, just like I predicted, actually get our sets so we could do the video. I mean, think mine were... They delivered it on the back steps next to the trash cans. Like, what are you guys doing? They never made me sign for it or anything. But anyway, we were joking that, you should edit the camera. So like you open the box up on camera and you start to shake it out and like the bard falls out and then another one and it just keeps falling. And it's just like a pile of them and there's nothing else inside the
nothing
box.
Nothing in there
and
but bards. No. That'd be awesome.
It's like, you complain. So we give them all to you. And we even talked about it, like, okay, just take that guy out and mail it to me and I'll do that and I'll actually
dump out a bucket of bards.
A bucket of bards. Well, the idea of a bard character, you know, you have a I guess he's a comedy character. He's a minstrel. He can like smash people over the head with his guitar and sing songs to make everybody inspired. I mean, that's kind of fun, I guess,
it's
to
different.
Kind of break up the seriousness.
Exactly.
But why make him an orc? It's kind of the weird thing. Because having an orc on your side, like a monster mercenary, that's kind of a cool idea. Or he's twisted somehow and he's, you know, they pushed him too far. He's like, I was tired of this old stuff.
Tired
you
of
know?
Killing the humans. I'm going to join him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's something different. It's something out of left field, I guess, for us veteran fans. But again, new fans, it might not be.
Might not be a big deal. They're starting from scratch. They have no idea what HeroQuest is meant to be, and it just it just is. But the way they handled it is, okay, so the bard, you can either play as him as one of the four. Mm-hmm. So I guess he just takes the place of like the dwarf or the
dwarf
elf
or the elf.
Whomever.
Yep.
But the way Teus did it is if the first person who dies gets replaced by him, which is kind of weird. So you come back as the goofy. So it's like your punishment for dying is that you come back
bard.
As this flamboyant guy
Orc
who's
bard.
Dressed like a pirate. Yeah. So I don't know. When I look at the bard, though, I don't have a problem with the mechanics of the character. Mm-hmm. Like he has got the three spells. He's got the rapier.
Yep.
I mean, that's, you know, whatever. I just see him as a cleric. Like he's a cleric. You know, maybe give him a holy staff instead of a rapier.
Rapier,
and, you know,
yeah.
He can still, you know, do his battle chants or whatever they happen to be. But or make him a pirate. I mean, a pirate is kind of a cool.
Yes.
But why a bard? An orc bard. I don't know.
Okay. That'd be one of your criticisms, maybe, I guess. I was like,
it's kind of a half-baked idea. A lot of people were speculating, and I've speculated too, is like he had this idea of a character, and he's like, it's got to go in here somewhere.
Okay.
Let me just shoehorn it in right here.
Yeah.
Because he's an orc, I guess. Because you do get other orc allies in the story,
but
they're just regular orcs. You know, it's
so
he follows us around for a while and whatever.
Yeah. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things maybe that, in your opinion, maybe you don't like about the new system, I guess.
Well,
I guess
my reaction, and I don't know if it's sunk in yet with a lot of other people, is that there was this fear that, okay, the lore is going to be derailed and we're going to lose focus and these new heroes are going to, kind of like a lot of other franchises, when you introduce like the next generation of new characters, like the old characters have to suffer so that the new characters can be pushed up.
Yes.
But really, they gave us no direction at all on these new heroes at all.
No.
Only the bard. It's like, he pops in if you die.
Yeah.
That's it. But there was no direction on the warlock, no direction on the druid.
That's true.
And we've got no direction on the knight either. So it's left completely up to the players.
Yeah.
And maybe that's for the best. So they limited the damage. Rather than
best.
You must, you know, the warlock must be the one who wins the day. And you're like, man, why does it have to be that? If you want to use them, great. If you don't. And really, most of the people that are going to play this game will not have the mythic tier, so they won't even know these characters exist. Really.
Exactly. Yeah. I think just like in true HeroQuest fashion, they just throw that stuff out there, and then they just let you play with it in the sandbox however you want. That's the way it needs to be, in my opinion.
Yeah. And as far as the quality of the quests, I think the Spirit Queen's Torment, I mean, it has some interesting ideas sprinkled here and there, but mostly it's just I mean, I think in the previous podcast, we talked about gimmicks, about how the original 14 quests were great because it seemed like every quest had a new gimmick.
It
new
did.
Surprise or mechanic or little swerve to, you know, keep you interested, keep you on your toes. And Prophecy of Tel'or, Stephen Baker, he definitely did that in spades. Yep. Yes. He had gimmick after gimmick after gimmick, and it never got old. It was always interesting. Spirit Queen's Torment has a few of those, maybe not as well done, I think.
Yeah.
But it still feels like it could be an interesting quest, especially if you haven't played for 30 years and you're like, oh, let's ease back in. But, you know, with still with something new, I think Spirit Queen's Torment could work that way because the difficulty isn't that high as far as like monster, because you can count up the monster body points on the quest map and the number of traps and kind of estimate, well, how long is this going to take to play?
Yeah, yeah. Kind of doing some mental math in your head.
Yeah, some mental math. Well, so people have come up with like charts and graphs and calculators. It's crazy. I think I even counted up how much gold you'd get at the end of the 14 quests one time. It was like almost 5,000. It's like, okay, so what could you buy? And then what would you have to sell to make it all work?
Oh, awesome.
assuming you're playing it straight.
Yeah.
But I think somebody, so they had to replace the Ephemers with Abominations.
Yes.
Or they had to. They wanted to.
Make chose
these
to.
Fish monsters, yeah. And it's a cool looking monster, but I missed the Ephemer. And I realized they didn't have permission and all that stuff. But it's like, okay, well, actually, I think this might have been Stephen Baker's pack, but they came up with an underwater level. It's like, oh, great. So they're water monsters in a water maze.
Perfect.
Yeah. And, you know, there's all kinds of little things. But when we get to the third one, Joe Manganiello, I think is how you say his name.
Yes.
So he's just kind of this celebrity guy that kind of just parachuted in and he has his hand in all this stuff. I'd never heard of the guy, but he had the 10 quests and I kind of felt sorry for him because it's like, okay, his stretch goal didn't get reached in the pledge drive. It's like, oh, well, he was going to give us a big dragon.
Yeah.
Big dragon. You know, how many of us came up with dragons for Hero Quest? Probably a lot of us.
It's like,
okay. Me too.
I had one.
Godzilla toy is.
Yeah.
Yeah. We our gaming group played with one. We even had a little tavern too.
Oh, nice.
It's like, we thought we were being cute, but it's like, okay, lots of people have come up with the same idea. So he comes up with this quest pack and I don't know who he took out to dinner or talked into letting them just make it. So
he's dating the VP of Hasbro's daughter or something. Right, you know?
Right. It's like, he said, okay, fine. His stuff will get released too. It's like, oh, great. So we get we got all the stretch goals of everything. And that's great.
It is.
And I thought, you know, I don't have any high hopes for his stuff. In my mind, I was thinking, okay, he'll give us all these assets and we can just use them, you know, for our imagination to create whatever.
Yes.
But I looked through his and I thought, okay, I'll give him a chance because none of this was revealed before the thing came out. Actually, while I was waiting for my package to arrive, this guy on YouTube, Dead Gamer, I, you know, toast him in just about all my Twitch videos because he actually sent me the video where he just like turned the page on camera, turned the page. And so I could read all of it.
Nice.
Before I got it so that I could put my thoughts out. Cause it's like, well, I'd be doing this. And he's like, sure. So he's a good guy.
Oh,
so
awesome. Check him out. Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah. So Joe Manganiello. So he only had the 10 quests. Mm-hmm. My impression of the whole thing was he started out with like, he's trying to be kind of cool, kind of cutesy. Like everybody starts in the tavern and there's this gnome and he's looking for a treasure and it's so goofy.
Yeah.
And like kind of third wall breaking. He's very casual. You'll notice if you look at the mentor narrator in the three different quest books. So in the Prophecy of Tel'or, he's very formal, very flowery, very proper. In Spirit Queen's Torment, he's a little more casual. And then Joe Manganiello's, he's like winking at the camera. It's just a goofy. My overall impression is that he's making these quests and he's like the kid in the group that is like so excited to play as Zargon and like put out his adventure.
Yeah.
And you just breathe through it and just beat all his traps, kill all his monsters. And he's like, what
happened?
So he goes back and he rewrites it so that it just kills everybody because the difficulty just ramps up like huge. Like he starts out with some cute ideas. Like he's got, oh, you find a mouse and you give the cheese to the mouse and the mouse leaves. It's like, oh, that's a cool idea. And then it's just like, monsters. You know, chaos spell or dread spells. You know, and so still, though, to his credit, it's not as like crushingly difficult as like the Elf Quest pack or the Barbarian Quest pack from back in the day, because those were absurd.
I've never got to play them, but I've heard on
I didn't either
ye old in that this is brutal.
Well, we've dissected them. I've played like so each of those. Elf and Barbarian, which supposedly they're going to remake Barbarian as well. And
yes, I want to get into that. Luck. Yes.
Say a prayer for them, because the way those work is they give you 10 quests.
Yeah.
And the first three are solo quests. And they explicitly say, oh, this is for a brand new HeroQuest player with a brand new, you know, no gear Barbarian or Elf.
Yeah.
And you go on these quests by yourself. And by the end, you'll have a bunch of gear so that you can join everybody else. And actually, the way it plays out, like if you count up all the body points and everything, it's a disaster. Like the person is going to get killed over and over again. It's like playing the trial by yourself. It's like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
You're going to get killed. And a lot of people are just going to get frustrated and not want to play anymore.
Exactly. Or the one guy that goes around and opens up all the doors.
Yeah. But the thing about like the Barbarian quest pack is there's a monster called a Yeti that you can find. Like you if you open a door and it's like right there and there's no reason to go in that. It's just like this is a kill door, because if it attacks you and does any damage at all, you get caught in a bear hug. The only way to get out of the bear hug is for someone else to hit the monster. Do damage. But since you're by yourself, it's impossible. So you're basically just like sitting there turn after turn, like, okay,
dying,
lost more health, lost, dead. Let's play Risk instead. So they botched that up. So the question is, if Hasbro does the same thing they did before with that quest pack, which is to just woodenly like copy and paste the old game right onto the page and then just change the artwork and change a couple of word substitutions here and there.
Yeah.
It's going to be a problem because all these brand new players are going to go, this is terrible. This sucks. You know, it's too hard. And they're either going to give up on HeroQuest, which means they're not going to make the Elf quest back, which is also a very difficult one, or anything else. Or, you know, you're going to get a few people that'll go online and say, how do I fix it? Well, here's what you do. You put mercenaries in the first quest, get rid of the Yeti, or you make it so that you can get out of the hold, you know, you homebrew it to fix it.
Yes.
But a lot of people have pointed this out to me. Like, I got a lot of crap from people on Ye Olde In, certain people, I'll say, because I was like, oh, yeah, it doesn't matter if the game is bad. You can just fix it, you know, fix it in post. But that's not really the way to make a product, right? You want to make it as good as possible, as balanced, as tested as possible.
Yes.
And when you're dealing with a nostalgic product that everybody loves, you want to tamper with it as little as possible.
You do, yes.
But when it's a product that was broken from the beginning, you got to fix it. And the question is, how are you going to fix it? Because for three decades, you've had people who've had their solutions to making the Barbarian quest pack work. And is your solution going to be the same as theirs or someone else's?
Yeah.
Or how's it going to be? So it'll be interesting to see,
see what they do. You know, based upon the release of the game system and the two expansions, Return of the Witch Lord and Keller's Keep, they didn't change anything. So I guess that's speculation on what they may or may not do with Frozen Horror.
Right. Yeah. It's probably going to be the same. I don't know if they could just put a disclaimer at the start saying, listen, when this was made, this was at the tail end of HeroQuest's popularity. We didn't have time to adequately play test it. We want to hear your feedback. Here are some suggestions.
Yes.
Like, you know, and they could just do it like that and leave it open-ended. So it's
I wouldn't even put it in the quest book. I would have just a separate insert.
An errata.
How
do you say that word? I said it wrong like a million times on my stream.
I would just have a separate insert that just states, like you said, hey, we didn't play test this right. Here's a couple of suggestions that you can do to make it playable.
But this is a faithful recreation of from 1992.
Otherwise, this is a Speaking of the recreations, I guess on the game system itself, what did you like about? Let's get specific, maybe about the figures or the furniture or things like that. What were you really impressed with?
Okay, yeah, I guess it's. good question. I like the fact that they were made out of a kind of a bendy plastic.
Okay.
Instead of the stiff plastic that we originally got. I mean, I started out because I couldn't afford to buy the Barbarian Quest Pack and the Elf Quest Pack, but I wanted to recreate them on my own.
Okay.
And so I was using the Reaper Bones miniatures. Yeah. From mm-hmm. Reaper miniatures, you know, the rubbery.
Yeah.
And those were so good. They were like so easy to paint, I thought. And they're so durable compared to metal and everything, and yeah. fairly inexpensive. And the fact that they went with a material almost exactly like that,
yeah,
just kind of felt proper. Because those things are going to get mangled. Now, a lot of people complained when they took them out of they were in that like vacuum sealed like tray. And then you just like, you have to put so much force, rip it out. Some people said they were broken. I think because they were pre-assembled, like they weren't on sprues. And so they were like pre-glued, and some of them were really poorly glued together. But a lot of the swords were bent, a lot of the stuff, but you just dip it in boiling water and you dip it in the cold water and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I like that. I like the fact that the dice were plastic okay. instead of wood, because as cool as wood dice are, I mean, those things got yellowed, the paint came off.
Yes.
They got nibbled by pets,
yes.
you know, all that stuff. I didn't like the fact that this is stuff that I do like. Let me.
Okay.
Yeah. So I like the fact that the dice were plastic. I like the fact that the character sheets were slightly larger.
Yep.
Yeah. The larger board wasn't a big deal for me, but okay. It's a little larger.
Yeah.
Stuff doesn't get as crammed. That's a nice feature. And the fact that it's a quad fold, I mean, I was kind of questioning that, but it doesn't take up as much room.
No.
So
I know.
You can kind of put yep. it away. As far as the miniature designs, a lot of the CGI, like pre-render things that they put out were really exaggerated and dynamic, weird looking, mm-hmm. which if you don't know what I'm talking about, look at the artwork on like the monster cards or the hero cards and mm-hmm. then compare it to the miniature.
Yes.
Like it's much more subdued, more, I think they look pretty decent.
They do.
I think that the designs look pretty decent. Like I complained about the goblins. I thought, okay, they got these big cartoonishly large heads and everything.
Yeah, they did.
Like they look like they don't belong, and they look like they belong in some other fantasy game. But
yeah,
they look pretty close to the original goblins, actually.
They do.
The fact that they had like the female characters, some people were like, okay, no, what does that mean? What are they trying to say? Because once you get into the political stuff, like it gets really ugly really fast with a lot
yeah.
of franchises. And I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole, but just to say. I know that there's like, I have a little niece and you know, when she plays a game, she's like, I want to be the girl. So it's like, yeah. okay, if you have the girl character, that makes it accessible for
yeah.
some more people. So I didn't mind that. In
my
fact,
daughter,
I was,
that's what my daughter did too. She gravitated yeah. all of them. All of her heroes were girls.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But cool.
you could always do that. It's just, yeah. you had to use your imagination. It's like,
yes.
no, my barbarian is 7 feet tall and he's got a mohawk and an eye patch. So, well, okay. Now I got to paint him to look, you know, whatever. We did whatever we wanted, but yeah. Okay. So there's female orcs. And I was cheering it on. I was like, okay, well, where's the female gargoyle? You know, where's the, you know,
point.
Female, abomination is yeah. Zargana, you know, is there a version? Cause they never actually say if Zargon's a guy or not. They just say
that's
they,
true.
The evil that's, sorcerer.
That's true.
Sorceress.
Good.
Sorceress.
See, there we go. Ah.
Yeah. So I don't know. it could have, they could have gone overboard with that, but
sure.
I think the fact that they had that was kind of a honest trajectory anyway, because we had gotten the female barbarian. We've gotten yeah. the female elf, but since they stopped making those quest packs, we didn't get the female wizard.
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed that they didn't make them more different. Like if you look at the classic female barbarian mm-hmm. from 92, I mean, she's got a shield and a sword and she
oh,
looks different.
Yeah, you're
than
right.
The male barbarian, but the female barbarian that they gave us, she looks pretty cool. I mean, she
oh,
looks
yeah.
like she could fight and she looks less like Red Sonja and more like Zula from Conan the Destroyer, I guess.
Oh yeah. But you're right. Yeah.
One guy pointed that out. I was like, that's
a
how I'm
good. Yeah, yeah. That's a good classic reference. What yeah. about the furniture? What was your thoughts on the furniture?
The furniture. I forgot all about the furniture.
Yeah.
Well, I was concerned that it was going to be too big. Like,
okay.
It's kind of a weird thing to think about because I have the classic set and I have the current set. So it's like I could just mix and match, right?
Yeah.
But I was thinking, well, the new furniture is going to be too big to fit on the old board. But actually, the furniture is almost exactly the same size.
Oh, nice.
And in fact, sometimes it's slightly smaller.
Okay.
Even though it's... The fact that it's solid plastic, I don't know. It's kind of good and bad because, yeah, okay. the cardboard furniture is a little more flimsy, maybe not as durable. It's cool to see the plastic, you know, sculpted and everything. But mm-hmm. now you got to paint it because it has less color now because it's just the whole thing is
yeah.
one solid color. And the skulls just kind of like sit on top. They don't like screw in. There's no pegs.
I know. I haven't put those on yet just because I was like, well, I don't know exactly.
Well,
like you said.
According to Joe, you're going to have to, some of those rats are going to like move around.
Yeah, move around. That's true. That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
The skulls, I guess you could glue those on if you want. Are you sticky tack? Poster tack?
Okay.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, I guess the furniture is more boring now, I suppose. But I don't know.
That's true. It's not colorized, but yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people complain because they said, well, I don't want to have to paint all this to enjoy it. Like, and so early on when they announced, okay, everything's going to be color coded, just like the old game, I think that was a sigh of relief for a lot of veteran players. Because some of us love to paint and some of us just couldn't be bothered.
Really. I'm not a painter. So I'm like, I just keep it all plain. So, it works for me, you know,
I'm starting out, but I guess the nostalgic part of me is, well, I don't want to paint it too much or make it too different. I mean, you see in the background, you guys can't see it, but I have a picture of some classic HeroQuest miniatures that are painted. Yeah. And actually those came painted. Like I got it on eBay cheaper because someone else had painted it. And
had painted
most
them
people,
all.
They either wanted the original colors or they wanted paint it themselves.
But, yeah. I'll send those to me and I'll put them in the show notes so the listener can take a look.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. So I was pleased with how the furniture turned out. They didn't deviate too far from anything, as far as that goes.
Yeah,
that's all I was gonna say. Yeah.
What about let's go on the negative side. What about some of the bad things on the figures or the furniture or the board? What are some negatives that you didn't like?
So it was kind of weird that they put the HeroQuest logo on the side of the board instead of at the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
It's like on the edge.
Yeah, you're right.
And somebody actually took the time to actually ask one of the designers why they did that, and they responded back, well, just because, you know, the scale of it, we could make the squares bigger, easier that way.
Okay. All right.
Makes sense to still keep it a square size, I suppose.
That's true, because the new Quest is the box is square more than rectangular.
Exactly.
Like the classic, yeah. Right. Okay.
Right. So instead of being like a rectangular board that folds in half, you've got this square board that folds into fourths.
Yep.
And and so then the HeroQuest logo, which tells you where Zargon, the GM, is supposed to be, is like split in half and it's on the side.
Yeah. Okay.
But you can still orient it. You know, he's supposed to sit in a certain spot and everybody else, you know, sits around him.
Okay.
Yeah. Negatives. Yeah. It's hard to say because I guess I've come to terms with a lot of the things that, originally I was skeptical about. I guess some of the designs still I think were better in the original.
Okay.
Like the new dwarf, I mean, he's got this gigantic axe.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously exaggerated.
Yes.
And the way the dwarf looks, I mean, it's more of a cartoony dwarf. So he almost looks like a giant baby. Like his head is huge. And
kind of like the goblins.
Like it's not like he's just a small man. You know, next to the barbarian, he's like his own creature, or he's got a giant head. So it's a different interpretation of a dwarf. I don't know if I like that or not, but
pretty minor, I guess, on your criticisms. Like, maybe that's gave you a month
minor.
Or so
nitpicky.
Or 2 months now to
nitpicky.
kind of. Okay.
Yeah. Very nitpicky. Yeah. Another thing, and I think this one is valid, even though it's very nitpicky, is the dice. The dice have the square corners on them. And why would that matter? Well, the original had the rounded corners. Okay, so I'm not just being a fanboy there. But in the original trailer for the new version, they showed like these nicely rounded corners on the dice. And in fact, in the current trailer, they still show them. It like flies towards the screen and it slowly rotates around. So you can see all the beautiful, and then it goes away. And then you just see the boring, like flat,
square.
Generic square, generic dice. I don't know if they roll better or not.
That's what I was just going to ask you. I wonder if they roll better when the round edges are rounded. I would think.
Yeah. I didn't major in physics or anything, but you know, with the flat sides, I'm thinking of like casino dice. Does that mean there'd be less likely to be like cockeyed, you know, where you have to roll it again?
Okay.
That's the only thing I can think of why they did it that way, or if they just ran out of time or something.
It's probably cheaper just to get square dice.
Maybe.
I would imagine
kind of like
that's
round bases instead of square bases these days, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Originally I was like, why round bases? Well, you can rotate the figure, but facing your opponent has
no value.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't change anything.
Whatever. And if you really wanted to, you could take a razor blade and just saw that thing off and put a flat base or whatever you want to.
But overall, I think pretty positive reception of...
Yeah, very, very positive. Yeah. I'm trying to think of... I mean, some of the new stuff looks like maybe the quality isn't as great. Like Prophecy of Tellor looks very good. Fair Queen Torment looks fairly good. And Joe Manganiello's one, you know, bless him. It looks like it might be a little bit of a mixed bag, let's say.
But
that's the extra stuff. The core game seems to be the fact that is very little has changed. It's like the highest praise is to say they didn't screw it up. I mean, I'm not trying to say it like that, but I mean the build quality of most of the stuff, assuming you didn't get a set that was like, you know, they forgot to glue the hand onto the zombie or whatever, you know, it's like some people got broken sets and that's unfortunate.
That is unfortunate. I like the doors. Any comments on the doors?
Yeah. Because like the dice, that was a problem back in the day because you had those really narrow pieces of cardboard that formed the doorway.
Yeah.
And a lot of times those would get bent just cramming it into the box. So a lot of people are probably grateful for that. Yeah. It's all plastic now. Even though you still can't go through the door, you can't pop.
No,
the doorway doesn't actually open. It's still Zargon, open the door.
Yeah. I got to open it, move it. Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. So I guess if you had a criticism, that might be one thing that you're like, hey, they could have gone
the extra mile. Of course that hinge is going to be very small. Like I have some zombie side Black Plague doors, which are pretty fun. But those hinges are very small. Like if you pop that thing open too many times, like absentmindedly while you're playing, it's going to just pop right off.
Well, maybe they can put that in an expansion. So, speaking of expansions, last episode we talked about expansions, but now that it's come out and we've seen what Hasbro's going to do. So there's two camps, I guess, in my mind. There's what we would love to see and what Hasbro is actually probably going to do. We talked about Frozen Horror. So I guess what are your, I like this section of it because I like the predictions. What do you think Hasbro is going to do? Let's start with Frozen Horror and then we can go on to the rest of them. What do you think they're going to do there?
Oh yeah. Well, my thought is if they're going to, I'm surprised that they were going to go with Frozen Horror. So I think if that doesn't totally kill the enthusiasm of HeroQuest for the majority of people, they're going to do ElfQuest pack, and they've got Stephen Baker, and supposedly he's the one who designed the European ones. So I don't see why they couldn't do Against the Ogre Horde.
Oh, okay. That's what I was going to ask you, but isn't there some Games Workshop licensing they have to work with on Wizards of Morcar and Ogre Horde?
I don't know all of the entanglements, but I don't think it's going to be any different for any of those because Return of the Witch Lord had, you know, the Warhammer Old World map right on the quest book.
Okay.
And all they did was just erase it for the North American release. And so why couldn't they just do that for now? They will have to convert those European quests to the North American format.
Okay.
But really it's like fans have already done that with HeroScribe. It's fairly easy. All you have to do is, you know, just make a couple tweaks here and there. And there'll be glitches. But honestly, there were glitches in the existing, like the Mythic Tier ones. Like I didn't say that in the negative section, but there's like a couple of quests where there's all this solid rock and they forgot to color it in.
Yes.
Or, you know, there's a treasure chest that has a trap and they forgot to color it orange.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's also in one of the, we were playing the other day. And then there's one where it says, look for the item in the treasure deck, and it's not in the treasure deck; it's in the artifact deck.
That's good.
Minor thing. I was trying to find it. I'm like, where is it? It's not in the. I don't think this is a treasure. This is an artifact. And I looked through the art. This is an artifact.
You should send that to me because Hispazargon on Yielden is doing a whole thread on all the errors that we found.
Okay, I'll try to remember and send it to you. Nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, there's missing cards and things too, and. I already covered that in Twitch, so never mind. But yeah, as far as those goes, so they really could translate those fairly easily, I think.
Okay.
Yes, Games Workshop did the miniatures for all of them, but I mean, that was always the case. It's you know, because you had ogres in Elf Quest Pack, and you had mercenaries in Barbarian Quest Pack, so they were still entangled. So if they can do it with those, I would say they should do all that. And
I'll stop you here. What kind of timeline then are you thinking on these?
Well, they could probably release a couple a year, actually, when you think about it, because, I mean, they released 3, 4, 5, 6. Like almost 6 in a year when you think about it. Because, yes, Keller's Keep and Return of the Witch Lord are basically just more of the same and a quest book.
They are.
And they gave us 3 extra quest books. And they're actually going the route that you suggested, which I think is cool. Which is having, the Hero Collection. Here's the Commander of the Guardian Knights. And it's just a box with 2 miniatures and a couple cards in it.
Yep.
So, if that's the Hero Collection, are there other Hero Collections coming out? So that makes me think they're just going to, and just like before, they're going to just drop these new heroes in with no guidance whatsoever and just let people figure it out. And if they want it, they'll buy it.
Were you shocked to see that
with monsters and
I
was surprised. I was surprised.
I was too. I think that Frozen Horror, from what I hear, is probably going to be first half of 22. Do you think that's realistic? Sometime between January, probably June or July of 22. You think that's realistic?
Since I don't run a business, I don't know how easy or hard it's going to be for them to do it. I mean, supposedly Hasbro has millions of dollars, but I think if they're smart, my thought would be they would do like what Reaper did and just open up like a factory in the US so they don't have to rely on the supply chain issues that no doubt have destroyed a lot of their consumer confidence over the last year and a half or so. Okay. But I think they really could do it, especially... Yeah, I mean, because for all we know, it's done already, and they just haven't told us, because they've been so tight-lipped, we have no idea. So it's like, promise low and deliver high, I mean, I guess. But I think, I think that is realistic, that they could do it in the first half of...
Well, and like you said, they've got the 4 quests already done, essentially. They just have to redo them. So I don't think it'd be too hard. Wouldn't that be great, not have to spend $600 on a Barbarian quest?
From eBay. Undercut. Well, and as long as they keep the stuff in retail, then they can undercut that scalper market. I mean, I understand people want to make a living, but it's so insidious. You know, it's here's this thing that a handful of collectors want. I'm just going to buy it up and charge them whatever I want. And they'll pay it too.
Oh, they will. They will. Yeah, what do you think? Ridiculous. What do you think they're... Now we got the 4 quests that they've, done in the past. What do you think their path is then after that, once they run out of the old stuff? What do you think they'll do?
I think they'll probably, and I hate to compare it again to Star Wars, but you know how when Disney bought Star Wars from George Lucas, they would come out like every other year. So you would have a brand new sequel with new characters, and then you'd have a throwback movie to appease the old fans. I mean, that's what they were trying to do. I don't know how successful they were. But they were trying. New fans, old fans, new fans, old fans. So if Hasbro did something like that, I think it could work, because they would, keep you on the hook saying, remember the Barbarian Quest pack that you always wanted and only saw in those little flyers and never actually played? That's coming out. And in the meantime, you know, whoever that we just reeled in from, outer space is going to write a new quest book for us to play, and so-and-so award-winning sculptor just designed this miniature, which is going to be another character that you can, and they could just do it like that.
Yeah.
And as long as they don't do what GameStop did, which was, take all these pre-orders and say, oh, just kidding, it's out of stock. It's like, oh, great. Come on.
Yeah.
See, they need to just figure this whole thing out with easier said than done with the supplies. And as long as people understand that it's going to be available and they can buy it, I mean, this high pressure sale stuff, I just don't think is good for business, really.
No.
Say limited time, hurry up and buy it.
You're referring to the Commander of the Knights thing?
I ordered mine.
I did too.
In plenty of time.
I lollygagged and waited 2 days, and I had a heck of a time finding one, but I did find one finally. No.
Good for you. Yeah. I'm just going to use them as mercenaries, honestly. Yeah. But I do like the knight skill of being like sort of like the Ron Church combat cards, like from Phoenix,
Yeah.
Like, oh, he doesn't have magic, but he's got a little trick up his sleeve, and he's going to do a little. you know, get a shield in the way. I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool.
I think your theory is pretty dead on. I think they're going to, like you said,
the back and forth.
We're going to go back and forth. We're going to do Frozen Horror. Then we're going to do some new expansion with new
some
figures.
Experimental thing.
And just keep going back and forth for the next year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. But the fact that it's coming out in retail, and we should have talked about that at the beginning, but that was quite a big controversy or bit of discussion with the group, the HeroQuest groups on Facebook and other places. You had the one side that said, no way, it's not going to come out in retail. And other people yes, it's going to come out in retail. And
I guess I didn't spend as much time in Facebook, but I remember that same kind of thing. I had people just telling me, like, Hasbro never releases their stuff in stores ever anymore. It's only going to be online, and it's only going to be for a limited time. And so get ready to buy it on eBay. And it was just like, wow, okay, darn. I hope that's not true, because they kind of hinted all along it was going to come to retail. So that was definitely a big sigh of relief as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, I mean, I could feel like really self-centered and be like, yeah, I got my game that I wanted. Haha, you know, but it's like, no, I want other people in the world to appreciate this game and other people who are nostalgic to be able to just wake up one morning and, oh, HeroQuest. Oh, I remember that. And, oh, hey, it's just as fun as I remember, rather than, oh, just this really rare collector's item that's totally out of reach. And it's only for this elite people of, you know, group of people that follow, you know, Hasbro on Twitter, like a cult or something. It's like,
exactly.
It just doesn't seem much fun, you know, to be part of that. I'd rather be just, oh, it's just fun for everyone and very accessible.
I want the 10-year-old me to be able to walk into Walmart like I did when I was 10 years old and buy this game and have fun with it. So that I didn't want it to just be a Hasbro thing. I didn't know much of Hasbro's history on these. So, but yeah, I was just like, you always relieved, like, okay, it's coming to Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in stores at some point here soon.
Yeah. Best Buy is getting it. Yeah. All these places.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So
yep.
I was pretty excited when I heard that. So, but yeah, I'm pretty stoked about it. I think there's a revival amongst the veteran community, and there's a revival amongst new gamers with it. So I'm mm-hmm. really happy that it turned out well. I know last year when we talked, I think I was a little hesitant. I was like, I don't know what they're going to do. And I think you were too.
I don't want to get too excited because it could turn out to be a big disaster, because so many franchises, you know, the hype builds up and then it just does not pan out, you know.
Yeah.
You just end up divided and angry.
Do you think Hasbro actually listened to the fans? Because they, like you said, with the colorization where they had the orcs green and the undead white and the heroes red, I'm kind of thinking they actually were listening to people, shockingly.
Yeah, I got that impression as well, because part of me was thinking, okay, these guys are smart, they're marketing geniuses. They already have their plan set in stone, but they're going to pretend like they don't know, and they're going to, oh, we listen to your, you know, you, the fans. And but I don't think that's really how it works. I mean, from listening to some of these stories about these other products that come out, it's like a lot of times the people in charge don't know anything about it, and so whatever they get told, they go, okay, I guess fine, we'll sign it off, do it. But there are people in all of these industries that know what's going on. And the question is anyone listening to them? So if they can connect with people, like there was something like we were talking about Taos and people bad mouthing him earlier, like he was responding to people, and he even got on the forums and was like, yeah, I forgot to put a door there. It's supposed to be right there. It's like, okay, just a little gesture like that goes a long way to building your reputation. And it's just like, okay, whatever else you want to say about him, it's like, he's listening. And yeah, when they color coded the stuff, that was another example of listening to the fans. And the Druid, like the first version of the Druid, if you remember the render.
Yes.
And the artist was like very proud of, like, oh, I just wanted to make her look like she just walked out of the gym, you know, with her workout clothes, and people just mocked it. It's like, okay, fine. She's wearing leaves and fur, and you know, it's like, okay, well, that looks better. Good job.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So
so they're listening. They're listening.
Which was surprising, because, you know, Hasbro is a $1 billion company, but the group that's in charge of it,
to just ignore it. Yeah.
But the group that they put in charge of it, Avalon Hill, I guess, and the people they hired to do it are really connected closer to the community than maybe we were thought we they would be.
Yeah, which is a good, it's a good surprise.
It is.
So yeah, maybe that is a good strategy. You're the big corporate overlords. All you care about is the bottom line, but you farm it out to someone who's maybe a little closer to the fans, a little bit more willing to listen. Because yes, you will get people that'll just complain endlessly. You can never please those people. Okay, fine. But there's enough voices out there that if you're smart, you know who to listen to. And it's like, these are my customers. You know, maybe I should listen to what they have to say. And, you know, maybe, maybe I'm not right about everything.
Yeah.
Because it's like I have an obligation to this community. There's some give and take that has to happen. It's not just the pure, like, artist auteur that just does whatever they want. And who cares if it goes down in flames because no one likes it but them. It's not like that. It's a game. It's for fun for the masses. So, yeah, it has turned out a lot better.
It has turned. Yeah, it turned out a lot. I was real excited just because I've been wanting to see them redo this for 20 plus years, but I was a little apprehensive. But one thing we didn't touch on and I wanted to get your opinion on was the app. What do you think about the HeroQuest app, or have you used it at all?
The funny thing is, I don't have a smartphone at all. I avoided it because I thought I'm just going to waste time on it. I'm going to be like one of these people that's always like in their phone all the time and be annoying. So I just didn't get one. I just have a regular flip phone. But for my job, there was something came up and it sounded like I was going to have to get one. And I was like, oh man, I thought, oh, I know, I'll get one of these contractless like burner phones, you know, just to do the minimum and then throw it, chuck it. But then I thought, oh, in the meantime, I could check out the HeroQuest app. Wouldn't that be cool? But then it ended up I didn't need it, so I never did it. And I guess you can use like BlueStacks or other emulators to like run it on your computer, on your desktop, but it's like so slow and there's so many glitches. I just never did it.
I downloaded it onto a tablet I have and it keeps crashing. So I gave up.
Shoot.
I'm like, well, I'm just going to wait and maybe I'll get it.
So I guess my uninformed opinion from other people is that it doesn't replace the physical game, because I wondered how they're going to do that. Remember, we're going full circle back to, is this going to be
it was
like
an app.
A mobile game? Yeah, I thought this is what it was going to be. But it still says it's all on the honor system. So it's like, okay, move your hero to here. And you're just like, no, I don't want to. So you can like break the game if you don't follow the directions. And they'll say, okay, Zargon does this. And it's like, well, did you kill the monster? Okay, you did. Okay, get him out of here. You know, it would teach like complete noobs how to play the game.
It would. Yeah.
And you do get, I mean, I've played HeroQuest over Zoom. I love doing it, like setting up the board and aiming my tripod at the board, say, okay, is your guy here? No, he's over here. Okay, fine. It takes like four times longer, but it's a lot of fun. But if you don't want to go through all that and you just want to play by yourself, it's like, oh, there's nobody to play.
Yep.
I'm tired of being Zargon. I just want to play it. Perfect.
Yeah.
But I even say in my Twitch stream, like, Zargon's voice is ridiculous. Like, yeah, you heroes, I will kill you all.
Like a Bond villain.
Really? Yeah. And I thought, okay, they're trying not to scare the kids, but then, you know, get the orc come on. It's like,
I think it's a, you can definitely get the impression that Hasbro or Avalon Hill, whoever did the app, is it's definitely 1.0. They're really playing with it. And the fact that it crashes constantly tells you that they're, and they have some interest in expanding on it. I think they may use it eventually as a map maker. I think that might come.
That'd be fine. That'd be fine by me, because I like HeroScribe. I'm used to it, but probably 99% of people have no idea it even exists, much less how to use it. And they want to make their own quests, so they're going to be scribbling it on graph paper like we all did back in the day.
Exactly.
Or so don't write on it, cutting it out.
Were you one that, I think maybe it was you, I can't remember who else
whited
wrote
it
on it, and you had to white it all out? Yes.
That's the craziest thing. I think one of your questions was, have you made your own quests?
Yes. Tell us about that. Yeah. Have you done any new ones lately?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll say that. Sorry, I'm all over the place. I'll get the last thing out about the app. So the AI for the app is very rudimentary. Like a monster appears and it just makes a beeline for you. There's no strategic thought whatsoever. So it's kind of like playing against the computer, you know, in Street Fighter, and then you play against the human, you're going to get steamrolled because
totally different.
They don't have the inventiveness. So yeah, it is what it is. I think it may draw in some more people because they'll get interested in it. And if they improve it, great. You know, they could have like, Zargon is dumb. Zargon is, you know, fiendish difficulty. Zargon is strategic, whatever. Monsters have self-preservation.
Yes.
As far as making quests. So I was realizing when you asked me that question, I really haven't made quests. I was thinking to myself, I've spent all this time like digging up notes from when we were kids, and my younger brother, who was the owner of the game, he made all these quests, and he did on a notebook, you know, scribbled on there. Sometimes you could barely understand what it was.
Oh yeah.
But I was painstakingly converting that using HeroScribe to like a nice neat format, and I gave it to him as a gift, saying like, here's your quest book that you wrote when you were 10 awesome. Or whatever.
How many did he have just out of other?
I think he had about 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had like two. Yeah. So he was definitely the quest writer in the family.
That's a good idea.
And,
cool.
And I went back to that original quest book where we had written in pen on the blank quest book and ruined it because the first time.
Yes.
And then whited it out and then written on top of it again in pencil. So I held it up to the light like a lamp. I put a lamp behind it and I painstakingly transcribed it again. So there's like two layers. So I got two more quests out of that.
Oh, cool.
But that's what I've spent my time doing. Or I'll see someone else's quest that they post online and think, you know, I could do better. And I'll just like modify it and use it. But so I've been modifying other people's quests. I haven't been making my own. So I sat down and I actually created a three quest sequence for the dwarf, like solo quests for the dwarf.
Oh, cool.
And I'm sending it to some people to see like, well, what do you think of this? So I've written up the notes, I've created the maps. And I think I might have pulled a Joe Manganiello on the first one because there's a lot of monsters. Like I'll just tell you briefly what it is. So it's still set in the HeroQuest universe, so no Power Rangers or Star Wars or anything. It's this there's this stronghold that the dwarf has to infiltrate. And he's not really infiltrating, he basically just walks up and fights his way in. But like so you're on the outer edge of the dungeon.
Okay.
And you kill some goblins and then you get a key. And so then the key gains you access to the next circle. And so you're going through that circle and the monsters are getting stronger. So now you've got orcs and fimmers and things, or I guess abominations. In the remake. Yeah. And, and then you get another key and then that gives you access to the inner sanctum where you fight, you know, the big guys. And this was a newer thing that I discovered, which I was trying to see. I'm trying to beat some of the flaws of the original game. Like when you're playing as adults, like the rescue of Sir Ragnar.
Yes.
Most people, once they rescue him, all the monsters are dead. So the alarm goes off. No one can hear it.
Yeah.
And you're just rolling to get to the door. That's
yes.
it. It's kind of boring. So I thought, well, what if you hid a bunch of orcs in some of those unused rooms? And when the alarm goes off, suddenly these guys get released and the reinforcements arrive, you know, that sort of thing. Or the race against time. It's like, okay, at the 30-minute mark, these guys get released. At the 60-minute mark, these guys get released. If you're still playing at 90 minutes, these other guys come out.
Yeah.
Which makes the game even longer. So I thought, okay, well, what's going to be the plot of this dwarf, you know, solo quest adventure thing? Well, the idea is, okay, you remember Boren's armor. Everybody remembers Boren's armor.
Oh, yeah.
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 Well, who the heck is this Boren guy and all his story? I guess in Warhammer, he does have a history, but I was like, I can't hear you. I'm going to make up my own. So he's this dwarven alchemist blacksmith guy, and he makes really cool stuff, but he's disappeared and, you know, his stuff is sought after, whatever. So you find Boren's armor, but you also find Boren's helmet and you find Boren's boots Boren's axe. Oh, it's not there.
Like shield and stuff.
Different things. So he's acquiring all these artifacts because I'm thinking, okay, just like what the elf and the dwarf solo quests were supposed to be about, is you're building up that one character so that when you rejoin the group, you'll be strong enough to hang with the veteran players. So that's kind of how I did it. So you gather the stuff and there's like a second level. So you get to the center and there's a tomb. It's like, oh, it's Boren's tomb, but his body isn't there and his famous axe isn't there either.
Okay.
But then the tomb slides aside and there's a stairway and you go down. Up or down. And so then, and the next quest, even though it doesn't make any sense, it's like, okay, you can still visit the alchemist shop and the armory and buy your stuff. And then, magically you're back in there. And so in the next level, I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think you find some of the stuff and then you find the rest of the stuff. And the last one actually is just you escaping.
Okay.
So you first walk in through the entrance door, like on the edge of the map, and there's nobody around. But when you cross a certain threshold, a door opens, like a room gets activated.
Okay.
And then you cross another threshold, another room gets, and you're like, okay. So the monsters are trying to like come at you.
Yeah.
And you have to find the other exit door and get out of there because you're just going to get mobbed. And
awesome.
You're really strong at this point because you've got all your stuff, but
you got all
you
boring
fight,
stuff.
Or do you run?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So as far as play, I'd have still have to play test it because for all I know, it's going to be a disaster, but
still.
I kind of know more or less how it's going to go.
That's cool. So yeah, that's your first foray into kind of a quest, making your own quest on your own.
As a grown up.
That's anyway. All right. That's all right.
Yeah.
Well, if
you
get
it
done,
Imaginello, I did the, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
If you get it done, you know, I'll put it in the show notes if you get it done by then. Otherwise, you know, we'll just make sure.
Worst quest ever.
No, anyway, yeah, about Joe.
I like feedback. Yeah, yeah. You know, I was going to say, I like pull a Joe Maggiano when I was a kid. Because again, that's why I identify with him. And it's funny that it's like he's playing like the 12-year-old from back then. I'm not mocking him. I'm just saying like, because I made a quest and it was easily defeated. And so I made the next one like way too hard to try to get even.
I did the
and
same
it
thing.
Didn't go over well.
What makes a good quest isn't necessarily throwing every single monster from the game in there, you know, but that's
right.
I know I did that when I first started playing it, when making quests. It was what makes it interesting is putting a bunch of monsters in. It's like, no, that makes it really boring actually, because you're just constantly fighting. And
combat is fun, but you got to work your way to it. It's like just like an action movie. There's got to be a reason for the fight. It's got to be a build, you know.
It's got to be a story. I love your idea with Bourne. We never really hear about, we hear about him, but we don't know anything about him. And so that's perfect, just to make him a dwarf, you know, alchemist or whatever that you said. So I love that. Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
And I figure just like the armor gives you one perk, like I didn't even say what the perk was. So the armor, it's like plate mail that doesn't slow you down. Okay, so it's like you're cheating there. Well, the helmet, let's say it protects you from falling block traps.
Oh,
you know, it reduces the damage because that's normally something you can't do anything about.
Yes.
And then the boots, they've got like shock absorbers. So when you fall in a pit, it doesn't do as much damage. Like, oh, that's amazing.
Oh, okay.
And then the battle axe, which I can't take credit for, my brother actually thought of that first, is Bourne's battle axe it's light enough that you can hold it in one hand with a shield in the other.
Ooh, okay. Awesome. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, play test with your brother then, right?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yep. Yeah, he and I haven't played in a while.
Well, I'll let you go here, Kurgan. It's been great talking with you. I want you to plug your Twitch stream and your YouTube stream, because if you're listening to this now and you want to really deep dive into variants and rules and all sorts of other things, you know, talking with Kurgan now, we've just barely scratched the surface. But Kurgan, your streams, you really get into deep dive.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
let everybody know where they can find you on those two platforms.
Yeah, and really, I mean, I'm not even an expert on this stuff. Most of this research is just stuff I've done in the last few years. So if you can come in and school me on it, even better. We'll have a conversation. So yeah, it's twitch.tv/HeroQuestFans is my Twitch stream. So just look up HeroQuestFans, you'll find it. We also have a Discord channel, which is called HeroQuestFans. That's a little harder to find. You may have to go onto yeoldin.com, go to the forums, and just look up HeroQuestFans Discord. You'll find that. And then on YouTube, it's actually XSC, the number 3, home of HeroQuestFans. So if you look that up or follow the link from Twitch, you'll see all the old videos that I've streamed that are only on there for 2 weeks before they delete them until I become an affiliate. But I got to get 50 followers for that. And I've only got like 6 or something now.
Well, okay.
Join up.
Well, I'll put a link in the show notes, Kurgan, so that everybody listening to this can go and check all those
out.
And get in touch with you. And
Should I type it in the chat here?
Well, whatever you want to do it, either way. But I really want to encourage people to go there. I know I listened to your and watched your video on Mentor. That was always a controversy on way back for the old timers.
Oh, yeah.
On was the guy in the on the card, was that Mentor or was that Zargon? You know, is it? And
I was disappointed by that. He'll always be Zargon to me. The evil Santa guy is Zargon.
Evil
but
Santa
I realized
guy.
it was always intended to be Mentor and then Morcar Zargon or Grimdead, as he's known in the Japanese version.
See?
We don't know what he looks like.
See,
he could be anything.
This is what you'll hear on and see on the YouTube and Twitch channel.
Yeah.
These little nuanced things that. But when you talked about that Zargon Mentor thing, I was like, oh, I remember that when I was a kid. I was like, which one is he? And then the Marvel special and just all sorts of things.
personally, I think Stephen Baker, I mean, he's clearly a D&D fan. He's also clearly a Tolkien fan. Like, if you go through Prophecy of Telor, it's really obviously Lord of the Rings inspired, and it's great. Like, it's not just a rip off. It's actually fun. So I wouldn't be surprised if the original idea was Zargon or Morcar is basically Saruman, and then Mentor is Gandalf. Like, that would make perfect sense to me. And yeah, he could go on and on, but, or maybe he looks like Skeletor. I mean, he could look like anything.
I saw that. I'm like, ooh, that's a different take on that Marvel winter special. And I didn't see that till like the late 90s, early 2000s. I didn't even know it existed.
Most of that stuff. Yeah. I didn't know it existed either. It was, I think you're maybe like 4 years older than I am. And I'm probably like a decade behind you as far as like community lore, but I'm catching up fast.
So yes, you are, man. You're amazing. You really deep dive into all this stuff. So I really appreciate your feedback on this, and definitely want to do this again, especially if the prophecies come true and we see Frozen Horror and ElfQuest and all the others come out, that would be great to check it all out again. So,
So
maybe one of my predictions came true, I guess, is what you're saying on that one.
I think so. I think you definitely have some insight into definitely have predicted some things accurately. So good on you for that, as they say.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks, Kurgan. And definitely check out his stuff, people. So if you're listening to this, check out his Twitch, YouTube, and Discord channels. And if you're a new fan or old fan, whatever, or if you agree or disagree with us, you'll let us know. We're always open to input, right?
Yep, for sure. Gives us more material to work with.
Exactly. Cool. Right, thanks, Kurgan.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, appreciate
it. Good luck with the podcast.
Thank you.